And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. I came across this article. Have you ever thought about having a jar of raw honey and just keep it around the house? Maybe for medicinal purposes? One of the oldest remedies for like a severe burn is rubbing aloe vera gel. You know, where you'd kind of break the leaf off and just smear the mucousy, thick, gelatinous goo on the burn. But man, the stuff works. Another thing that's been used a lot over the years that you read about in the old folk medicine books is just the application of raw honey on a severe burn. And you know what? I am convinced they work so well. One of the studies that I read years ago was saying that people that suffered horribly from genital herpes, and that's a sexually transmitted viral infection, I do not recommend you get it. I'm sorry, but you know what I mean. But they tried all the acyclovir drugs, all the antiviral medications, and they compared it against a little bit of gauze with some raw honey buttered on it. And when there was an outbreak, you just laid it directly over the genital herpes, and it went away faster with the honey than any other medicinal drug. And that's always impressed me, that it could work that fast. Well, I came across this study from the British Medical Journal, and the year is 1985, but to me it's just interesting. Okay, there was an experimental study. They had 159 children that had acute gastroenteritis, and what the net result was, they had diarrhea that just wasn't going away. And you know as well as I do that when you have diarrhea, you start losing all your minerals. Everything from potassium to sodium, chloride, magnesium, calcium, probably even zinc, copper, selenium. Anyway, when you've got diarrhea, your body is trying to kick something out of there that's toxic. It's trying to save you. So in this particular study, they were treating children that had acute bacterial diarrhea. Okay, here's what they gave them. They either gave them sodium, potassium, and chloride. That just means electrolytes. You're kind of thinking about like maybe Gatorade right here, or Powerade. And so they use two sweeteners. They either use glucose, which is sugar, or they used raw honey. All right. The time taken to recover from the bacterial diarrhea was significantly shortened in the solutions containing the honey compared to the solution containing glucose. Now, obviously, I'm not trying to say that if you have acute bacterial infections, use raw honey. I mean, you can if you want. Actually, after reading this study, if I had food poisoning of some kind, that might be one, you know, application of raw honey. Another one. So, you know, maybe you should have a jar of raw honey ready to go for maybe a burn that happens on your skin, or you have something that comes up that needs an application of honey, like I just talked about. Or if you had a child with acute diarrhea. You know, one of the things that I do remember about honey, and you've heard me tell that story before, when they opened up one of the Pharaoh's tombs. I don't remember the name of the Pharaoh, but he had this room that had all the items that he needed in the afterlife next door to where his sarcophagus was, or his tomb. And one of the items that was cataloged by the archaeologists was this pottery jar that was rather well sealed. And when the archaeologist pulled the lid off of it, he noticed that it was cloves of garlic that were completely covered in honey. And so the way that you would recreate this is you would take like an amber-colored jar, you know, like an amber-colored, a darker brown canning jar, and just put raw cloves of garlic in it. And the key is, cover the raw cloves of garlic with honey. Now, raw honey's the best, but what I always think of, when you start studying the properties of honey, one of the things that it has is it supposedly has every specific beneficial microbe that's natural to find in a human being's gut. I'm telling you, this might be good information. And so when you put the raw honey over the cloves of garlic, what happens is It starts the process because of the good beneficial bacteria, this fermentation process. And I know that the jar of raw honey that the archaeologist opened up, it was probably 3,000, I don't know, maybe 3,500 years old as far as they could date it. But he took a bite of one of the cloves of garlic. He thought, man, this is exquisite. This is good stuff. Of course, it's, in my mind, it's one of those things, the longer that you let it kind of ferment, I think the more potent it becomes. And you know what the application would be? Besides the Pharaoh in his afterlife, you know, feasting on garlic and honey cloves. No, I know that doesn't happen. I'm just throwing it out there. But they put the food in there so he would have something to munch on, evidently, in the next life. But what if you start feeling like you're getting run down? What if you feel like you're having a cold or something's just not right? What if you had like a bacterial infection that produced diarrhea and you couldn't stop it? Well, I don't think there'd be any harm in eating the raw honey garlic fermentation cloves, would it? Now, if you want to go to the doctor and get a massive round of antibiotics and Imodium AD, that's your choice. The thing of it is, I understand this just like you do. A person has to choose to become their own advocate, and they have to. If you go to a doctor's office, you have to be willing to completely ask for whatever test that you think that you need. You can't just guarantee that a doctor or a nurse practitioner or a PA can always determine which test you need. What if you need a test that measures your iron load in reserve, like ferritin? What if you're suspicious about your uric acid levels? Well, you might want to know that. What if you think maybe the cause of your chronic severe fatigue is because you're harboring this continual ongoing low-grade viral infection called Epstein-Barr? Well, you have to be willing to ask the doctor for that. You know what Jesus said, ask and it shall be given unto you. So if you ask for it, for all we know, maybe your gut instinct is right. Maybe your lab request will prove to be very, very beneficial. But you get where I'm coming from. You've got to be your own best advocate. So, if you had a jar of raw honey at the house, well, how hard would it be to make a solution for a child? To me, it'd be pretty easy. What if you just put a pinch of Celtic or Redmond's or pink Himalayan salt in it? And, you know, did it that way. Okay, number two. If I can find it. Okay, here's one right here. You've probably heard that the number one form of bacteria that's always related to urinary tract infections, and I know that women have a much rougher go than what men do, and I think that one of the reasons is that women might suffer from more horrible urinary tract infections as they age is because they may have a drop-off of production of hormones, okay? Now, I'm not one of those that's going to say that hormones run the show. If you want to say it, that's fine by me. I personally think that enzymes are what pretty much control and regulate every chemical reaction in the body, even hormones. So you want to have your enzymes working well, and maybe the short, sweet course on this would be you need minerals. Do you remember when God told Adam that he will return to the dust from whence he was made? That means as a body begins to deteriorate in the grave, it's going to return back to where the minerals are what are left over. Those are remaining. So you might remember the law of thermodynamics. Matter can neither be created nor destroyed. Anyway, something to think about. But E. coli is one of those organisms that's pretty famous for causing diarrhea. It's pretty famous for wrecking someone's gut. If you want to have a gut that's churning and gurgling and cramping and there's sharp pains and you have diarrhea, some people even experience a little bit of bleeding with E. coli, just like a woman could experience some bleeding with a urinary tract infection. And so here's what they did. This is an experimental study, and it comes from the Journal of Dairy Science, 1979. And what they did was, the title is called Effect of Feeding Lactobacillus Acidophilus Milk. And all they did was, this is the core of the study, they gave people Lactobacillus acidophilus, and how did they give it to them, or what was their delivery system? They just kind of dumped the capsules or the spoonful of the Lactobacillus powder into milk and said, here, drink this. So what they noticed is the individuals that drank the milk that had the Lactobacillus acidophilus, which that's a probiotic bacteria, pretty common. Any health food store that you might go to would probably have generous amounts of it or good microbes. But what would happen was there was a significant reduction in the toxic E. coli. That's what I meant to say. And so you got to understand the principle here. I know this is kind of my analogy, and I'm not trying to be sacrilegious by saying this, but you know what it says in Romans chapter 12, verse 21? Do not be overcome by evil, but rather overcome evil with good. So what is supposed to happen here? If you got a whole bunch of toxic germs living in your body, well, we need to overcome those with good microbes, good bacteria. And there's even studies showing that good beneficial yeast or fungus might play a role at getting rid of unwanted viruses or really toxic bacteria, or even parasitic funguses like Candida albicans, things that do not make your body a better place to live. They're actually quite toxic. The number one problem with toxic bacteria, viruses, and fungus is they eat some of your food, and then in turn, they do what every living organism is supposed to do. They give off their metabolic waste. It's just like the analogy of a car. Oxygen and fuel combust in the engine to produce energy, but guess what comes out the tailpipe? That's the exhaust. So when toxic bacteria live inside of you, their exhaust is quite toxic. And that's what makes a person feel bad. So they showed that when you put Lactobacillus acidophilus in milk over a four-week period of time, that the good bacteria started crowding out all the toxic disease-causing germs. So just keep that in the corner of your mind. You never know when you might need that information. So you're going to remember that raw honey has all the beneficial microbes that the human microbiome needs. Interesting, isn't it? Now here's another one right here. This comes from the American Journal of Gastroenterology in the year is 1961. I know, I kind of laughed to myself. 1961? Are you kidding me? That is over 60 years old. How could information that's not like in the year 2021 or 2022 be? I mean, but it's 1961. And it comes from a German journal. I can't pronounce Kinder Heikel Flocken. I can't do it. Anyway. No, I'm sorry. That's a different one. That's the next one. I'll skip that one then. But from the American Journal of Gastroenterology, they found that when they gave adults and children Lactobacillus acidophilus, that it was extremely effective in treating both viral and antibiotic-produced diarrheas. I don't know if you've ever heard of that before. You are sick. The doctor or the nurse or the PA prescribes an antibiotic because they suspect that you have an infection. Do you know what one of the ways that you know that you have a bacterial infection? Well, if the doctor does what's called a complete blood count or a cell blood count, sometimes it's called a CBC with a differential, there's one of those markers called neutrophils. It's pretty easy to look at if you know what you're looking for. I think after I've seen about 2,000 of them, I think I know how to spell neutrophil now. But when neutrophils are high and lymphocytes are low, this is a clear-cut sign that you've got a bacterial load on your body. When lymphocytes are high, that may be more common with a viral infection. But this was great benefit to cure the diarrhea, and I say cure because that's a term they used, when they just gave Lactobacillus acidophilus. So who cares if that was 1961 or not? Maybe we could move forward 60 years and say, hey, maybe we learned our lesson. 60 years ago, we learned that raw honey and taking cultures of Lactobacillus, you know what, in the year 1961, for all I know, you just couldn't get your hands on some Lactobacillus acidophilus like you can now. Now you could go into any health food store And you could say, where are your probiotics? Or in some cases, where are the refrigerated probiotics? And they would say, oh, they're over here in the refrigerator. Duh. But anyway, you could take those and you could crowd out all the toxic germs in your body. Or you could at least try to. Okay. Where's the next one right here? Oh, yeah, this one caught my attention. There is a very famous medical journal that's called The Lancet. And this comes from the year 1987. Well, what they did was, and this was an experimental study, and all they had was five patients, but you'll understand why. Have you ever heard of a hospital-borne infection called C. diff? Sometimes they just say C. diff instead of a Clostridium difficile infection, which I don't know if you remember, but there is a horrific toxic infection called Clostridium tetani. That means you got tetanus. If you've ever seen pictures of a human being with tetanus, you'll say to yourself real quick, I don't want anything to do with that. And if you've ever heard of botulism, that's called Clostridium botulinum. Well, this is the same family. It's called Clostridium difficile. This is a really toxic, bad bacteria. And so here's what they did. They again, and this is 1987, they took five patients that had relapsing. That means they couldn't get over it. Every time they thought they were well, it came back with a vengeance. And what they did was they took 5 milliliters of skim milk, and that was the delivery system. So that's not much milk. But what they did was they loaded the milk up. They said 10 to the 10th power of viable bacteria, which was lactobacillus. Now, after 7 to 10 days of drinking this milk with the lactobacillus, which is a probiotic, a beneficial bacteria, 7 to 10 days, 4 out of the 5 patients had total remission with no further relapse, while the 5th relapsed after a 3-day remission. And it says that one patient that had the relapse, they gave them metronidazole for 10 days, and then they followed up again with lactobacillus, and then the patient had no further relapses. So I know I'm going back to the year 1987, but this is like from the journal Lancet. Isn't it interesting how they cured Clostridium difficile by giving beneficial bacteria? Now, the question that I have is, I wonder how many hospitals use this as a protocol. So if you're the head of Tyler Gastroenterology Associates of East Texas, I wonder if when you do the clinical rounds, you say, hey, we've got these 5 patients that have a bad case of Clostridium difficile. They've been in the hospital for 50 to 60 days. They're wasting away into nothingness. They're losing their nutrients. They're about to die. What do we do? And somebody says, well, there was a study in The Lancet in the year 1987 where all they did was they loaded them up with beneficial bacteria. And that's what you want. You want the good Lactobacillus acidophilus to overcome the bad bacteria, which is the C. diff. Does that make sense? Okay. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. The program is Health Essentials. Yes, everybody knows that I'm totally biased. I'm so biased toward trying to stay away from the most toxic route possible to heal the body. I'd rather go to something that's been proven to be safe and natural for the body. Okay. By the way, that study that I read about the honey for children that had bad diarrhea, there was one form of diarrhea the honey didn't work for. You want to know what it was? If the kids ate rancid fat, here's what I'm thinking. If you had onion rings that were cooked in vegetable oil that was probably 2 months old and it was already rancid and toxic at that point, well, you can't do anything about that. Your body's going to say, I have got to get rid of this stuff right here. And so that kind of leads me into my next topic right here. And this is the question that I get so frequently. And it really is a major, major issue when it comes to the American diet. So here we are right here. We have an observational study. It was done 1983. It's a foreign journal. Please do not make me try to pronounce the journal from Czechoslovakia. So here's what they had. They had 300 patients. Well, let's go to the phone lines. That might be funner for me. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. I have a friend whose son-in-law had gallbladder surgery, and his incision is not healing like it should. It's still oozing fluid, and this is after a month. He had it about a month ago.
Oh, dear. What do you think that means if it's still oozing? He's got an infection. Something's trying to come out of him.
Right.
I wonder if a doctor left a sponge or a piece of thread in there. That'll sure do it. So if there's any foreign material that was left behind, oh my goodness, it's just going to continue. I think the term that I probably like to use is called drain or drainage. It's just that pus and that toxic fluid is just going to continually come out. So, you know what doctors used to do back in the 1940s? And please just take everything I'm saying with a grain of salt. What they would do over a surgical incision is it was just mandatory hospital procedure back in the day for a major surgery. And I'm going to call a gallbladder. It would be a major surgery if it was my gallbladder that was removed. But they would just pack sterile gauze or dressing in castor oil. And they would lay directly over the area to make sure that it couldn't have a staph infection. So either the young man has a piece of debris in there, or he's got an infection, or his body is just not able to push it out or get rid of it. So what you're doing is trying to help it. So do you know by chance what the doctors say about this?
I don't, Dr. Morgan.
Well, what would your gut instinct say is the problem here?
Well, let me say this. She did tell me that the doctor told him he does not understand why he is not healing.
Oh, the doctor is saying that he's clueless about why he's not responding. Okay. Well, in my mind, all I can think of is either there's a small piece of debris in there that wasn't washed out or removed, or he still has some infected tissue, because that's what happens when you get an infection. It drains. And I don't mean to be gross by saying this, but could you imagine if you had a bad sinus infection and you blew your nose and yellow gunk came out? You'd be glad it was coming out, wouldn't you?
Yes.
What were you going to say before I interrupted you?
Dr. Morgan, he did take the vaccine. Would that have any bearing on why he's not healing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's really a deep topic. But even if he hadn't had the vaccine, if he just had COVID, that'd be enough for me. Because, you know, COVID by its very nature, or the coronavirus, guess what it does? It goes to the weakest tissue that it can seem to gain access to. So I know you know how this works, but let's just say somebody has lungs that are not that strong, they're weak, they're always having problems, whether it's asthma or bronchitis or one respiratory infection after the other or pneumonia. Well, it doesn't take a genius to figure out those lungs aren't real good, and we need to make them stronger again. So if somebody had like a heart problem, guess where the coronavirus is going to go? The heart. If somebody had an issue with their digestive tract, and actually the gallbladder and the bile ducts and the biliary tree, that's all the digestive tract. Well, if that's what weak, that's where the coronavirus is going to go.
Oh, my goodness.
But either way, can I just give you a few simple recommendations that I would if I were in the same situation, if I couldn't figure it out, can I tell you what I would do?
Yes, sir, please.
Okay. I might consider calling an infusionist who can just... Is he still in the hospital or is he home now?
No, he's at home.
Well, if he's at home, he can call an infusionist. And what they can do is they can give him an IV, and of course they can add electrolytes and vitamins and minerals. That's all good. But what I'm really after is I want them to give him as much vitamin C as they can put in a bag. And then the next thing is add a substance called glutathione.
Okay.
And this is just, we're going to bypass the digestive tract because obviously it's in pretty rough shape. But the glutathione and the vitamin C, it may help bolster his immune function just enough to where his body can rise to the occasion and overcome. Now, the other things that I would do, I always think when there's something in the body that we're trying to push out, we need thymus extract. And the thymus gland, you've probably heard me talk about it, it's the largest gland of the immune system. And so, if I say this a different way, any time that a person is suffering with a problem that is lasting more than 7 days, man, I've got to just assume that the thymus gland is not working right. It's not doing its job. So if you start taking thymus extract, you're trying to take a weakened immune system and bolster it. You're kind of giving it a shot in the arm of nutrients. I mean, right. The stuff is invaluable. So I can't even tell you how many people I've seen where they have chronic infections, and the moment you give them thymus, they start leaving the body. Now, that's my observation. Somebody could say, I don't believe that's true. Well, who cares? So number next. The thymus gland requires what's called vitamin A.
Yes, sir.
And when I don't have them, actually, I've got this right in front of me right now, but I didn't look up the no, it doesn't cover it. But then again, this is going to be my opinion right here.
Okay.
The reason they named vitamin A is because it's known as the anti-infective vitamin. Now, it's not water-soluble, it's fast-soluble. And, of course, I'm going to tell you where you get it from. You get the biggest dose of vitamin A from calf liver or beef liver.
Right.
Which is what he should be eating if he wants to live. But you give people natural vitamin A. I'm not a fan of what's called retinal palmitate, kind of a synthetic man-made vitamin A. Just get it from nature. And so if it's his liver and gallbladder that's sick, that's the very thing that you need to give him. It's the most nutrient-dense substance on the planet.
Well, he'll be listening to you.
Okay. Well, then we want to really give him ample amounts of vitamin A to get the job done. Now, because it's the biliary tree, I always use a product called AF Beta Food when I'm trying to improve bile flow to get that stuff moving. He may have a situation where I might even call it stagnation of fluid. It's kind of like in the blood. You know how the Bible says the life is in the blood?
Yes,
well, what would happen to you if your blood just came to a screeching halt?
Wow.
You know what a man told me the other day? He said that he used to routinely give blood, and I want to say he would go to Carter, you know, in Tyler on Baxter Street, kind of behind TJC, or that's what Don told me, which I like Don a lot. But anyway, he was saying, you know, he said, Dr. Morgan, he said, you know, they only keep the blood for 7 days. It has a shelf life. But you understand where I'm coming from here.
Yes.
When you start removing blood from the body, I mean, how long can it stay viable and contain that life force and stay alive? Not real long.
Not long. Right.
So we need to get the fluid moving in his body. And actually, I know you know where I'm coming from, because if we can improve blood flow in this young man, then that's the ticket to transporting his white blood cells to the area where there's drainage. And so we might need to pull all that stuff out. And the other day, I know I'm rambling here, but I got this big splinter in my foot. My fault, walking barefoot through the brush and debris. But I like that, though. But it took a while, but my body eventually pulled. I couldn't get it. It was too deep. But guess what my immune system finally did? It pushed it right out. Yeah, exactly. And that's what his body's trying to do. So I say, why don't we just support it and help him to get better? Now, I'm going to be pretty firm on him on this deal. I'm going to plead with him, don't eat any refined sugar at all, because sugar has been shown to severely depress the normal function of the immune system. So if somebody said, you know what, he's dying out, let me bring him some Twinkies, donuts, and ding-dongs, don't do that. bring him some liver and onions.
right.
If he needs something sweet, what are we going to do? Well, historically, when you're trying to purify the body, it's kind of hard to beat watermelon. Kind of hard to beat grapes.
Okay.
If you had, now, would you be for watermelon if somebody sprinkled some salt on it?
Of course. That's the only way to eat it.
You sound like one smart cookie. But the poor guy, this is all after a gallbladder removal, right?
Yeah.
You know what the other thing that we really need to do, and this is going to sound weird, We've got to get him outside today and orient his body, the stomach, toward the sunshine. It's called heliotherapy. And I don't have all the studies in front of me, but it's so interesting what happens to the human body when you start getting natural sunlight over an organ that's diseased or sick or it's not working right.
Right.
Just take the shirt off, point your body. Hey, you can do it today. I don't know if you could do it in the Arctic Circle, but you could do it here in Texas.
You're right.
And so these are things that would be a really important thing. The other thing that I thought of that popped into the back of my mind, it was in the very, very far corner of my brain, which there was a lot of empty space between the front half and the back. But I thought of colostrum. You know how, like, if a mama cow gives birth to a baby, and so for the very first thing that comes through the udder for the baby to nurse on is really colostrum. That stuff is like, it's like immune system on steroids. And so I might even consider giving the young lad some colostrum to see if we can't really strengthen him.
Health store, Dr. Morgan.
What'd you say?
You can get that at the health store.
You sure can.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken, human mothers are the same way. That kind of a grayish, silvery, sometimes it even looks like a very faint blue color. That clearish liquid that comes out, that's colostrum for the baby.
Wow.
You know how when a woman's about to give birth, maybe a day before she gives birth or 2 days, she might notice that some of that milky colostrum is starting to emanate from the mammary gland?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I've never experienced that since I'm not a woman. Now, I've heard stories that if you ask some people, especially a Supreme Court justice, what the difference is, they can't tell you. But to me, it's pretty obvious. Women can have babies and nurse, and men can't.
Well, I'm following you.
Okay, but we need to get this guy well, because this is so draining and so discouraging where he feels like, oh, am I ever going to get out of this deal after a month?
And we're worried about him. This is serious.
Well, this would all be simpler if you just had copies to his lab work, because like I said a while ago, when neutrophils are high and lymphocytes are low, that suggests a bacterial infection is at play here. And so we want to respond to that.
Okay.
And so I think I've given you a lot of stuff to at least try and play with.
You have, Dr. Morgan.
So if I drive down a country road today and I see a guy sitting on the side of the road in a lawn chair sunbathing his gallbladder surgical scar, I'll stop and say hi to him, okay?
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Morgan.
You're welcome. Thanks for your phone call, man. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, back to what I was talking about. Okay, this is a study based on 300 patients, and 200 were females, and I think that's appropriate, and there was 100 men. And they also had 200 controls. That would be maybe the control group. 100 men, 100 women. And what they did was they studied for the purpose of trying to ascertain what are the effects of certain foods or factors on the development of a condition called cholecystitis. That's an inflamed gallbladder. So this actually might be important to the young man that's had the gallbladder removal. By the way, if you asked any doctor 110 years ago, let's go back to 1912. If you ask any doctor what the purpose of the gallbladder was, they'd say, oh, you're talking about the trash can. So you've got to have in your mind that the gallbladder, it literally serves one of the most important functions to keep you well and to keep your health in good working order. You got to have the gallbladder. I know if you've had it removed, well, maybe you need to take ox bile or bile salts the rest of your life to kind of help offset that. But you don't want the gallbladder to fail you, because one of the things it does, it plays a powerful role in kicking out a lot of the toxic waste that would harm you otherwise. So the gallbladder is actually your friend. And so what they found was, they said the most important factors were found to be frequent consumption of fatty and fried foods and smoked foods. I'm guessing they're talking about barbecue. they also showed that when people eat an overabundance of meals, and so this is not rocket science, but when you eat too much, you're kind of putting some stress and strain on the gallbladder. But when they say frequent consumption of fried and fatty foods, they're probably really not breaking it down and talking about, a salmon fillet, lightly sautéed, or I didn't mean to say fried, but cooked in butter. That's probably the better way of saying it. No, they're talking about toxic vegetable oils. What are you supposed to do when you eat fried foods like deep-fried onion rings and canola oil, and all of a sudden you're burping and you're belching and you feel bloated and you have diarrhea afterwards? What message are we supposed to learn? Don't eat that stuff. It's toxic to your liver and your gallbladder. It doesn't like it. Isn't it great how God designed the body? It warns us and alerts us to protect us. Okay. They also noticed that people that had the most gallbladder problems, they had this decreased vegetable consumption. And that's not rocket science either. What do vitamins have? I mean, what do vegetables and fruit have? They contain nutrients, but they also contain what's called fiber. And fiber is what helps attach to the bile acids and the bile salts so you can attach toxins to them. So yes, when a person goes to the bathroom and they have a bowel movement, a big part of that is just your detoxifying. Does that make sense? Okay. Here's one right here. It said, and this is an observational study. You want to hear the title of the article. It comes from The New Scientist, Volume 14, March the 21st, 1985. Here's the title of the article. It says, How Sugar Can Get You Stoned. I'm sorry, I probably shouldn't laugh at stuff like that. Okay, here it is. I'm just going to give you the short and sweet. It said, Gallstone formation in young people, which it can't just be young people, but what they're saying is, if you're young and all of a sudden you got gallstones, what are we looking at here? It said gallstone formation in young people was correlated with an increased sugar intake. And guess what is the very first thing they mentioned? Soft drinks. Okay? I know full well there's a lot of people that follow Dr. Pepper's orders. Now, what does Dr. Pepper say? Drink me at 10, 2, and 4. And instead of drinking water, why don't you drink some more of me? Well, it's just, it ain't no good for you. You know that already. So the more soft drinks and the sweets that you eat, as well as an increased or fried foods, guess what you're getting? It says it may increase cholesterol synthesis by stimulating insulin secretion, which means gallstones are going to form. I can assure you, you are not all of a sudden going to be better off by having a liver, biliary tree, and gallbladder full of stones. Okay? It ain't going to happen. Here's another one right here. This comes from the British Medical Journal, 1984. See how far I'm going back? What do you think about the word wisdom and knowledge? Do you like that? Well, we got to learn. Okay? Dietary habits were reviewed for 267 hospitalized patients that had newly diagnosed gallstones, compared to 214 matched controls in the community, and also 359 hospital patient controls. And I can tell you right now, I want to be one of those 214 matched control in the community, which means I'm not in the hospital. Am I thinking clearly about this? I don't know how you feel about this, but I want to stay out of the hospital. And I know you do too. I can't imagine any human being saying, you know what, I really, really want to suffer here. Please put me in the... Yes, there are some people that's how they roll. They want to be sick, they want to be in the hospital, but I've never understood that, and I still fail to understand that. I mean, don't you have all these wonderful things that you want to do? God has given us so much work to do. I would prefer to be healthy and strong and not be in the hospital. But then again, there's some people, you ask them, how many surgeries have you had? And they might say, oh, I've only had 24 and it hadn't affected me at all. Well, anyway, okay. Here it is right here. Here's the punchline. Refined sugar intake in drinks, they're talking about soft drinks and sweet tea, was found to be one of the greatest risk factors independent of being obese. Because if you're overweight, yep, that puts a significant strain on your gallbladder. All right. By the way, the number here at the station, if you want to call me and ask a question, there's a lot of people that want to call, so if you have a question, now's the time to do it. The number is 903-586-5257. Okay, here's another one. This comes from the British Medical Journal all the way back to the year 1981. And here's what it said. This was just an observational study on women. It says, women who skipped breakfast or had only coffee to drink. So I guess you could say the coffee is their breakfast. They experienced a much greater incidence of gallstones than those who ate a morning meal. Okay? So when you go to sleep at night, you have literally, I'm just going to guess here, there's no way I can count them, but this is what I've read and studied. No, you know what? When I had to do a dissection of a human cadaver in school, I didn't enjoy it. But it was our learning tool. And the liver is really one of the most interesting organs, but it's filled with what are called bile ducts. And for all I know, you probably have at least 50,000 bile ducts. So when you go to bed at night and go to sleep, one of the actions of your biliary tree or the liver or the bile ducts is to actually produce a substance called bile. And it produces a lot of it. Maybe a quart and a half. That seemed like a significant amount to me. So when you eat food in the morning, what you experience is your liver and your gallbladder contract and they start pushing bile into the intestines. That's the number one factor that makes you have good, high-quality bowel movements. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yes, Dr. Morgan?
Yes, ma'am. You may have to turn the radio off in the back.
Yes. Hold on.
Sure.
Alexa, stop. I was calling...
Alexa, stop.
I was calling to see if you might give me some ways to get better blood flow in your body.
Yeah.
I feel like sometimes, I guess, my big toe is kind of sleeping or something like that, and then sometimes in my arms, so I think my blood flow is not too good.
Well, let me just kind of run down a list in my mind, and it may not be in perfect order, but just kind of cut me some slack. But I would be hard-pressed not to start off with the element or the mineral called magnesium.
Okay.
And one of the terms that I really like this term a lot, it's called the magnesium burn rate. And all that means is when somebody is under psychological, mental, spiritual, emotional stress, their body just burns through their magnesium at a faster rate than what they can replace it. And so what happens is when you have ample amounts of magnesium in your blood, blood tends to flow really, really well. And so I want to say back up into the year, until the year 1994 or 96, I don't really remember which one, I could look it up. Do you know what the number one therapy they would start somebody on? If they went to the hospital and they said, I got a heart attack, and that's what a heart attack is. You are not getting enough blood and oxygen to the heart muscle, so it goes into the big honking Charlie horse cramp or spasm called a heart attack. They used magnesium sulfate. They would start an IV, and they would infuse magnesium. Now, I don't know if you know what the cost of magnesium sulfate is, but it's like dirt cheap. Well, now they favor drugs like Eliquis, or Plavix, or Xarelto, other blood thinners, and those are all very, very expensive. And personally, when I read the side effects on those, they're very, very disconcerting, and they make me take pause and think to myself, what are we doing here? That's just me talking. So I need to sell you on magnesium. And so magnesium is what I want you to consider. And most likely, because of magnesium being so depleted from our soil and food supply, this actually might be a great opportunity just to consider getting some supplemental magnesium. I've used so many different forms. I've seen really good results by using what's called magnesium lactate. And I also use a product called Easy Mag. It's just kind of more of a food and vegetable form. The tablets are like super, super green. So magnesium is really critical for making sure that your blood can hold more oxygen and it flows at a higher velocity. And so I hope you understand the idea that the faster that blood flows through your body, the better everything is going to go. That's as opposed to sluggish, slow-moving blood. And under those circumstances, you're kind of asking for the blood to thicken and to, well, I'm just going to say clot. I don't mean that in a bad way. The other thing that I'm going to try to sell you on is a mineral called potassium. So if I could convince you, I just don't even think you need to take potassium supplements. That's my opinion. Eat a green salad. If you had one big green salad a day, that's going to give you about 5,000 milligrams of potassium. And so historically, where potassium intake is the lowest, you can also plot on a graph the amount of strokes in the population. So when there's real low potassium, you tend to see a lot of cardiovascular events. But you can get around that by eating things like flounder and salmon and avocados and sweet potatoes and salads. You know, all those things are real food. They don't come in a box. They don't have any preservatives. And so the other thing that's really good for circulation is cayenne pepper. You ever heard of cayenne pepper? There's an herb called ginkgo biloba. Now, that's the one that it works. It just tends to take a while to reach its maximum benefit. Now, I'm a fan of cod liver oil. Cod liver oil, if it's done right, you actually preserve vitamins like vitamin A and other nutrients in it. But I think that's so important, critical to establishing blood flow. And the other thing is, if you look at the amount of mileage that people 100 years ago put in every day, they averaged somewhere between 17 and 19 miles a day. And you already know what I'm going to say, but the average American, they call sitting down the new pack of cigarettes because, and I'm not picking on anybody that's smoking cigarettes, but there's not many things that really damage your blood or your body like cigarettes. It just creates massive oxidation, which means everything in your body begins to rust. That's what makes you age. It's called oxidation. So sitting down a lot is you're really asking for health problems. So how do you counter that? Is by walking. Even walking barefoot a little bit every day has been shown to stimulate regrowing new arteries and new veins and blood flow. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Hello, you have reached KBJS 90.3.
Well, I didn't think I missed it by much, but I did. Sorry about that. I just went too long on my talk. Please forgive me. Call back again. The number's 903-586-5257. I'll be glad to push the button more quickly this time. But when you walk barefoot and you have your bare foot on the grass, I know, you're going to tell me your feet are tender. Well, you're going to have to get with it and start moving your body. The life is in the blood, but you better make sure that blood's moving fast. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Morgan.
Hello. How are you?
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. I can hear you fine.
Okay. I wanted to talk real quick about my son. He's 20 right now. You've seen him before. His name's JT.
Okay.
And so he had the...
No, I remember specifically you asked for an appointment, but when I called you back, I hadn't heard back from you at all.
Well, I've been going through a lot. It's been
No, and that's the way that life is. You get one event after the other that comes up.
Yeah, it's been really crazy. But we both had COVID in early August.
Oh no, I'm so sorry.
Yes, and he was a trooper. He wound up having to have two IVs and got through that for nutrients and such. But long story short...
Well, did the IV prove to be very beneficial to JT?
I think so, yes.
Okay,
but,
good.
But we both had the migraine that was horrific. It was terrible. And we also both had the sore throat of razor blades. it just felt like razor blades every time he swallowed. But a few weeks later, early September, he developed contamination OCD. He's always had germ phobia, but I've never seen anything like this in my life. And he's pretty much a basket case. It's heartbreaking. So I've researched and found that when you've had this virus, that things can come up afterwards, and you can have problems that a few weeks later. And I really feel in my heart that's what's happening.
What's happened is it's affecting his brain or his neurological tissues. So that's where the virus went.
Yes, and with that migraine for over 7 days, I just had a feeling it's going to have some after effects.
I sure wouldn't want a migraine for 7 days straight. That sounds horrible.
It didn't even feel like a migraine. It was just so unusual.
What do you want to do?
I'm desperate right now. We are getting microcurrent neurofeedback therapy, and that is helping a lot.
Okay, where are you going to get that?
Mr. and Ms. Duke and Tyler.
Okay.
And the first session he had on a Tuesday, you know, he's pretty much nonverbal, and he might say 20 words a day, but after that session, we left at 3, and he would not stop talking until around 11.
Well, it did something then.
It did something.
Wow.
It did.
That's pretty impressive.
Conversation, eye contact, he's so funny. I just couldn't believe the first time I really heard him talk. But now, again, we've had a few more sessions, but now he's just kind of...
Why don't you buy a book by James Nestor called Breathe?
Yes. They were teaching him breathe techniques, too, because Mr. Duke is a...
What I'm suggesting is, why don't you buy a book called Breathe by James Nestor?
Okay.
Because that way, I mean, we can talk about it, and we can talk about breathing techniques, but the bottom line is, we've got to get a whole lot more oxygen and blood flow to the brain to clear out all this waste and debris that's built up secondary to the long-haul COVID symptoms.
Got it.
So that's one thing right there. Now, is he willing to eat liver and onions for food?
Probably, because JT still eats cilantro. When you recommended that, he eats it every day.
Okay, so the next thing is, did you know that the hippocampus, which is part of the limbic system,
that
it tends to respond very, very well to vitamin A, which means when you're low in vitamin A, the hippocampus gets cattywampus. And that's where, that's part of the limbic system. That's how we process emotions and thoughts.
Yes.
And so if you give him calf liver... How much time are you spending outside in the sunshine every day so he can start making vitamin D, because that controls brain-derived neurotrophic factor?
Right.
How much time is he playing outside?
He does go outside, and he walks around the block, and he spends a couple of hours outside. Now, he's been really struggling this past week, but yesterday he got out, and the day before.
Well, when you go to this doctor that you're getting your feedback and everything else, what do they say is the chief root cause of the problem?
That basically everything that you have said even before about, like, the dual mode network.
The default mode network, yes.
Yes, it's kind of over my head, but...
Thank goodness that's why we have books and YouTube.
Well, one side of the brain is kind of the fight for flight. He was in that mode for about 2 or 3 days.
Oh, obviously he's that way right now if he's going kind of OCD.
Yes, and I'm looking into the mold, too. In his bathroom, there's some mold. It's on the wallpaper.
Well, I know all this can be overwhelming, but we've got to, like, narrow it down. What are we going to focus like a laser on here?
Exactly.
Well, you tell me, what do you want to accomplish? Because all over the radio, I can't examine him.
I know.
And I don't even know how long it's been since I've seen him that one time. Has it been like a year and a half?
It's been a while.
Okay.
But my question is to maybe help get him detoxed, or, you know, like...
Well, and that's why I recommended liver and onions. And so what you can do is you can start feeding him grapes all day long.
Okay.
You can give him watermelon, but please put plenty of salt on it. It can be like Redmond sea salt. It can be Celtic salt, pink Himalayan salt. Make him some Gatorade every day. Just take a gallon of water, put 2 teaspoons of salt in it, 2 lemons, squeeze them, or limes, and then put a whole can of that grape concentrate that's frozen from the grocery store.
Okay.
And if you can start drinking that. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, we're trying to do a detox here, so mm-hmm. can the kid do an Epsom salt bath?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, 2 heaping cups of Epsom salt, we want to start soaking up some magnesium in his body so he can start to turn this around.
Yes, yes.
And then the other thing is, can JT write?
Yes.
He needs to start writing every day.
Yes.
And what I want him to start writing is a to-do list, and I want him to organize his day.
Okay.
What we're doing is, everything you're describing to me, it's called chaos. Mm-hmm. But what we want is, we want order. Did you know that people that write in cursive every single day, they preserve their brain function so much longer? I mean, it's like astronomical, the numbers, compared to people that never write anything.
I believe it, yes.
So we need to start the process of detoxification, but I'd say if there's anybody at the house that could play games with him every day,
mm-hmm.
I don't care if it's cornhole or... that sounds funny to call it cornhole, but... he needs to be playing volleyball and badminton. The more that he laughs and giggles, the faster we're going to start rewiring his brain.
Right.
But we got to clear all the cobwebs out.
Right. I agree.
Okay.
All right, then. I'll be calling you definitely to make an appointment.
Okay. Yeah. Excellent.
Okay, then. Thank you, sir.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All righty. If you'd like to join, oh my goodness, there's 2 minutes left. That's probably not enough time. Okay, let me go off on this topic right here for just a second. Years ago, I was reading about this Bedouin family where the woman was becoming very, very hallucinogenic. She was OCDing. She was just, but when they took her to the hospital, and I want to say the hospital was found in Tel Aviv, which would be Israel. And the woman, she and her family, they lived out in the middle of the desert, but they discovered, and I'm not trying to overthink the topic here, but she just really had some of the most severe B12 levels of all time. Well, in order to rejuvenate and grow new brain cells, you got to have vitamin B12. So thus, if I recommend liver and onions, it's not to gross anybody out. But I'm telling you, the stuff is so nutrient-dense. What do you have to lose by trying it? Some people just take the raw liver that's been frozen, and they'll cut it into a cube and just swallow it without eating it. Anyway, we're living in a toxic world. And so the number one predictor of all time, who's going to have the roughest go from an infection, or the roughest go from... getting a vaccine, is usually low levels of B12. I would say there's other factors in there also. I really believe that the more iron that people have built up in their tissues, you're just asking for all these problems to develop. And so that might be one thing that you may have the doctor do, or whoever's doing the studies on this. There's got to be some clues in the bloodstream. It's just a matter of us keep pursuing it. So doing a ferritin test, measuring homocysteine. It would not hurt to measure vitamin D3, because sometimes you don't know if you don't try. I would personally want to do a CBC with a differential, because that gives you like a clear look at what the white blood cells and the immune system is doing. And also the blood. You ever heard that phrase, the life is in the blood? Yeah, the blood is a very unique organ system. So let's take advantage of those lab tests and see what we can learn. You can do a urinalysis. And all these things are easy to do. But the prize is, you get a son that's happy and healthy. And if mama and son are healthy, so is everybody else. Anyway, you're listening to KBJS FM 90.3 Jacksonville, Tyler, Longview.